Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Deep in the heart of Appalachia, guys set out on a quest to create the greatest podcast.
Sorry, dude. I thought we agreed on the correct pronunciation of Appalachia.
No, dude. We've talked about this. We've talked about this over and over and over. It's pronounced Appalachia.
Listen, freaking angels and the women got together. That's how we got Bigfoot. That's how we got vampires. That's why we got all of this stuff.
These ancient Appalachian mountains that are literally older than bones. There's old entities here. When you start finding out more about them, they start finding out more about you.
Good Lord, sir. This goose has gone rabid. And you think you're just going to run up with your little sword on the king of the goose squad?
Listen, the old entities of Middle Appalachia are unexplainable. They are eerie.
Breach.
And they are one of these things that will keep us, the hill folks, and the people who live in the area, constantly searching for answers that they probably will never ever find. And this is why we love Appalachian Intelligence.
Hey there, hill folk, and welcome back to another episode of AI. With you tonight, your hosts, Justin, Ryan, and Lance. Ryan, Lance, how you fellas doing tonight?
Fantastic.
Doing really well. I walked around this week from being negative 4 degrees and freezing my nipples off to running around outside in shorts. It's been a fantastic week here.
Yes. Yeah, most definitely.
Amazing today.
It was well below zero a week ago and 65 degrees today. So it was one of the few times in my life, though, that I've worn a t-shirt and shorts while snow was on the ground, which was kind of weird. It was kind of weird.
Strange. It was very strange.
But we've made it through. We're here. We're on the other side of sub-zero temperatures. You guys, you hill folk, you know where you can find us. First, I want to thank Ryan. He's been holding it down the last couple episodes. Y'all know me. You know my schedule. Lance is just as busy. That's why we have three hosts. So we can keep this train rolling all the time. So you guys are constantly getting content no matter who's here. And it's always going to be great conversation. And, you know, you guys know that and understand that. And you show that. You show us a whole lot of love. You share the show. The show's grown tremendously. And it just keeps on going. And we thank you. And we appreciate you guys for all of that. Y'all know where you can find us on all the socials. Facebook, X, Instagram, Discord, YouTube. You just go to the old Google machine, type in Appalachian Intelligence, and our ugly mugs and these sweet, sweet, sultry voices just show right on up. So you can find us on all those places. You can support the show a whole lot of ways. We have a support the show link. That's listed in the show notes. You can follow us over on Patreon if you do feel so led to do that at patreon.com/Appalachian_intelligence. We got a lot of extra content and stuff over there. You can come check it out if you feel led to do that.
Usually, Justin, to stop you, I just got access this week to the Patreon.
Good.
So, how'd you get access? I still don't have the password. Thanks, Justin.
I didn't give it to you. He's a hacker.
Real quick.
So expect some more content popping up on there soon, now that I can start adding some stuff on there as well.
And because you haven't listened to it yet, I did today. I started it, but our homies up in Ohio, Cryptids of the Corn,
it's north,
hit 1 million downloads. And I just want to say, congratulations, boys. Way to go.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Good job, guys. Justin, Jay, they're great people. They're great hosts.
Yes.
Let me sleep over a couple nights when I was up that way. Totally for free. Can't beat that. Do you guys know how we do it? We usually read off 5-star reviews, show out a lot of love. We do have a really, really special guest with us tonight. This guy is an attorney, a professor. I think he's been an assistant dean and dean at a couple different law schools. I mean, we're talking intelligence here, guys. He's bringing the intelligence to Appalachia. All right. It's all in the name. It's all in the name. And he did live here for quite a while, and now it's still kind of considered the foothills. I mean, we'll still include him, I guess. I'm blessed enough to call this. Before he's all those things. And now he's an author. He is an author. We're going to be talking about his book, which is great. You guys are going to want to get your hands on this before we ever, there he is showing it on screen already. And I am blessed enough to call this man family with us tonight, Professor Derek Howard. Derek, how are you tonight?
Doing good. I'm doing real good. I'm happy to be with you guys. Thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it. I feel like I'm back in the hills right now, sort of. But it's warm in Atlanta, so I guess that's a big difference.
Yeah.
You'll wake up from this nightmare in a minute. Don't worry.
It'll be over soon, we promise.
That's all right. Trust me. I'm enjoying the conversations already. The things that Justin's told me about what you guys do, I really like it. I really dig it. I understand where you all are coming from. And I think it's a good way to connect with people on a higher level. So I'm happy to engage. Let's wrap.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, we appreciate that. We appreciate that. You know me, I've always just wanted to be the loudest person in the room. So I just decided to start a podcast so I could be.
That's the smartest person, right?
That's what Stephen A. Smith says.
No. I don't agree with that only because, one of the things that I've learned is that the loudest person in the room isn't necessarily the smartest. They're just the one who's trying to garner the most attention. You know what I mean? And they're trying to overcompensate for something more often than not. So I call it rag popping. Have you guys ever been by a professional? You know what I mean? They take the rag and they'll pop it, pow, pow, when they get hit. They don't have to do that. They do that for the extra dime. You know what I mean? So the person who's loud is doing it so they can get more attention. Sorry.
Yeah.
Justin's been overcompensating for a long, long time.
I mean, oh, Lance, come on, man. We just got on. Slander for later.
Yeah, well, let's say that for later, Lance. So, Derek, for the hill folk out there that don't know you, don't recognize you, why don't you let them know a little bit about yourself, a little bit about what you do, your occupation, and let them know about this awesome book that just released. It's out there on the market.
Cool. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time. My name is Derek Howard. As you said, I'm just a regular guy from Philadelphia, to be honest. I bleed green, Philadelphia green. I come from the projects. Okay. Just like a lot of other folks come from other places, you know, whether you call it a trailer park, you want to call it something else, it's all the same, right? So we're all interconnected. And, I became a lawyer because I wanted to help people whose rights were being taken away from them, they were being disadvantaged, you know? So that's the path that I was on, but I also was a writer. My degree is in writing. I went to the University of Pittsburgh. I guess you would call it a double panther, undergrad in law school. I spent my time doing, working on cases for high powered law firms and big corporations and $1 billion cases and all that stuff. And I really wasn't fulfilling my dream of really advocating for people. So, I went into teaching. But it didn't really satisfy my need to write. So, you know, I decided to write this a few years ago and do research because I wanted to satisfy someone's, what someone said, something I read about from Neil deGrasse Tyson. He said that the best fiction in his mind was the fiction attached to reality. So, and he thought that Star Trek was a good example of that. So I wanted to write a story about how we're all interconnected, that pulled in aspects of reality, both our past and our future, so we can examine our present, about how the fact that we're all interconnected is so overlooked in today's society because of social media and, you know, other opportunities like that for people to take the spotlight away from what I would have to say is a mutual path to success. I don't want to say it's the truth. It's the number one thing, because I think that's all relative and we need to get beyond being relative. So that's what this story is about. It's about advocating. It's about advocating for our elevation. You know, we live in a time when, you know, we have all this amazing technology, all these AI, this, that, and the other can do all these amazing things. But as humans, we tear each other down and we're so base. It is one of the most appalling things about us. But yet we're so, you know, brilliant and deserving of being apex on this planet. So this is a story about a blind man who finds himself as the last human man and alive, along with another human man, but he's a white man. He's 81 years old. He's a doctor and he's a brilliant biomedical engineer. They find themselves being executed as the last two humans on a warrant that's been served on humans by Celestrians, who came into existence when the Big Bang occurred. Sound, light, darkness, matter, and time. Death became another one later on when matter had a child. Okay. They're male and female characters, but I won't get into that right now. The warrant was served onto Earth to be executed in 1900. And in 1945, one of these elements, these Celestrials, who I call the Galactic Council, was told he had to execute on that warrant. And he did so during World War II, or he started to, until he fell in love with a Korean woman who was being held captive by the Japanese. And when he saw her plight, he decided to take pity on humans and allow them to live. But he was doing it for selfish reasons. He was trying to find a way out from being subjugated to control by these other Celestrians. But he also, so he found a way to garner power and be able to fight against them later and take them over, stage a coup, if you will, by converting humans into transhumans until there were no humans left. And he made us his army. But these two are left. And at the end of the battle they have, the beginning of the story, the 81-year-old doctor is killed. And then there's this last human alive, this black man named Sledge, blind from Philadelphia, trying to find a way out of his situation, his desperation, trying to determine if he is indeed the meek, as they say, and he inherits the earth, what should he do with it? Do we deserve more than the things that we have come to represent today? Or do we deserve something more that perhaps some biblical text has suggested? That's what this story answers. And I'd like to say that I'm happy it's not what you think is the answer.
Nice. Dude, I'm excited to read this book now. That sounds awesome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. You know, and one of the things I want to say real quick is that what I love about it is I try to tap into the universality of all of us, how we all we're interconnected, you know, and so the the story is actually written in different languages, not long parts of text, because I can't watch those subtitle movies, you know what I mean? Trying to follow the mouth, like I'm reading here and I'm looking there, like I miss the action. I don't care what you say, you know? But there's some of that in there, because I want people to know that it's not, this is Afrofuturistic science fiction, right? And say Afro, okay. No, I don't want to pick it up. Okay, no, it's ethnic. Okay, well, wait a minute. What does that mean? That means it's all of us, because you're an ethnicity, I'm an ethnicity. There's no reason our ethnicities can't be on the same plate at the same time. It's not like they spoiled food, you know? So that's what it's about. It's about us trying to get across that line. Because if we don't, like I said, this plays out in 2050. If we don't, this tells you where we're going to be.
I love how you put it that way, too, because the path, you know, all the technology we have, so many advancements, except in our own selves.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at the past, you can already see what your future is going to be if you don't change in the present. I love how you put that. That's so eloquent.
Thank you.
And it makes you sit and think. You're like, oh, wow. That's amazing.
Well, thank you. And so, you know, I don't know, as Justin was suggesting, you know, how much do you want to say? I'm so excited about, you know, the different plot twists and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, what happens in the first two chapters to me is exciting. Am I supposed to tell what happens? I don't know if I can tell.
That is totally up to you. You give
them, they got to buy it, Derek. They got
to
buy it.
You give them just enough to reel them in. Well, what I love about, I mean, I agree 100% with Ryan and what he was saying there. And you did put that extremely eloquently, the way you're talking about how it's a universal thing. You know, we are all connected in a lot of different ways. And, you know, if we have to study the past to learn from the past so we don't commit the same atrocities in the future.
Sure. Most certainly.
But what I love about this book, and I do have just to throw it out there, Hillfolk. I mean, like I said, we are family. I've got one of the first initial, like rough draft, signed Omnis, Last Man of Earth. That's also the title of the book. I don't think we put that out there. That's my bad.
Yeah,
Omnis.
Keep saying that.
Omnis, Last Man of Earth is the title of that book. But what I love about it and where it kind of leads into our realm of research and observation and the things that we talk about all the time, it has so much of the weird in it. Just to put it extremely loosely, you know, it has artificial intelligence and transhumanism and this galactic council of celestial beings that you're talking about. And, you know, as we keep gearing farther down the line here, you know, we're seeing all of this disclosure coming out, you know, whatever you think of that. We're seeing a complete and total ramp up of UFO sightings and people that are experiencing these, what we would consider supernatural or paranormal events.
Mm-hmm.
It's really starting to ramp up in our present day. So what you do with this book, I think it's brilliant. What you do with this book is you take the diversity of the world that we live in today, but you expand that and broaden that to a universal level that's bringing in transhumans and cyborgs and these extraterrestrial beings, and you have so many different. But if you're looking at it today, you know, you can consider all these things. It's the same thing.
Yeah, but I want to jump in and just say this. I mean, we know that there are people who have who are cyborgs, who are living cyborgs, real actual people. So, I mean, it's not like I'm making up something. You know what I mean? These are things that are happening, have happened, and I'm just connecting them. The glue is fiction. These things can't happen. But, I'm trying to add that element of reality to it, because I do believe that the underlying premise is true. The underlying premise is an arc for us to view about what can happen in the next 25 years or so. I mean, you have people who are paying to go into space, right? Like celebrities, oh, take a shot up there and see what happens. That's like a good commercial for them. You know, this story pertains to when there's a division between the rich and the poor, because you can see the widening gap right now, you know, in the, I'm going to say it this way, and no offense to them, because, you know, that's what they got, right? They earned it. The salaries that athletes are getting, you know, we're talking billions now, you know, so, you know, you can pay now to go off into space. Eventually, they're going to leave a whole bunch of people behind. Okay, that's what they're getting ready. I mean, I hope I'm not extrapolating too much and sound like a crazy man.
No, you're in the right place.
Not at all.
You're in the right place.
As a matter of fact,
that.
One of our theories is pre-flood, they were actually advanced, and the Ark wasn't a boat; it was a ship when they left.
Mm-hmm. You guys gonna have to hit me to that text, because I don't know. But those things are happening now. You know, in the book, I refer to the cosmic call, which is an actual thing. There was, and I'm not going to remember how to say it correctly now, but Ali, Ukraine, they launched a satellite, and it was emitting what they refer to as the cosmic call in the space. So part of what I say in this story, and kind of it'll be fair game because it's on the back of the book to some degree, is that the aliens heard the cosmic call. Okay. Well, I premise when it was emitted or sent out in 1999 that we became a reality show. And so we've been being watched and entertaining people for all these years. So just as we now look at the internet and we find entertainment, guess what? We are someone else's entertainment too, you know, and ultimately, as a result of that, we will receive other people's or other beings' judgment, just as we're running around judging everybody else by saying these things, these outrageous things. And I'm not even going to say who I'm referring to, but it's mentioned that those who go on the internet or social media, whatever you want, a platform you want to call it, and they start running their mouths about other people's business, they're either a rat, because back in the day, you know what I mean, people who run a street and be talking about your business, they were a rat. You know, they weren't praised because they wanted to be, they were in the room when it happened, and now they're in the street running their mouths. So they were a rat, or as they say, thirsty. You're trying to get it come up on you. Or there's a legitimate reason to say what you're saying, right? Because you want to protect someone, not because you want to make money, but you know, I want to prevent someone being harmed. But we don't care. As long as we can, you know, gain more popularity and fame, we're just tearing each other down as a result. So take off from your rocket, leave the other behind, and see what's left over. Until ain't nothing, it's nothing left. You know, so, but anyway, I don't want to say all doom and gloom, because it's good today, right? Today's the sun's coming out, it's melting and everything where you guys are. But I wanted to, can I just tell you where the name came from, Omnis?
Absolutely. That was my next question, where your inspiration and what led to this particular story.
Cool. So the name Omnis, or the word Omnis, is referred to in the movie Fahrenheit 451. It's a device that holds the knowledge all from books that they're trying to destroy. And so, you know, trying to think of what's a cool name for Afro-futuristic character, hero. I wanted to find something that was cool like that. And that's where the name actually comes from. It means everything. It means all. So, you know, you want to think of, if I was a badass superhero, what would I want to be? Like, I want to fly, you know, or I want to run fast. I want to be invisible. No, I want to be it all, you know? So that's where the name essentially comes from. And it started as I was going to do it as a graphic novel. Like, I have all these comic books in the thousands that I own. And, you know, so that's where I got my, you know, got a lot of inspiration from. So I wanted to do it as a graphic novel. I wanted to have a little bit more, you know, substance in terms of the writing and the art. And so I did it, designed it, ready to go. And then I find out, I guess I should back up, because Justin knows this part of the story because he's family. One of the things about this character is that he develops a third eye. Okay, I'll give that one. He developed a third eye because of, let's say, razzle dazzle fiction and things happen that you can read about. But it bores through his head and comes and appears at some point, emerges. Around the time that I was finishing that draft, which is close to what Justin has, I went to the doctor and woke up 3 days later. Found out that I had a seizure and I had something growing in my brain. I knew nothing about it in terms of the story. It just was a coincidence, right? Well, not a great one for me. Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's been dealt with. Let's move on. So that became part of the story. But when afterwards I found out that costs of doing it the way I wanted to were higher. Could have been lower if I looked around, but whatever, right? So I decided to rewrite it or re-sculpt it into a prose novel. And it has a lot more meat as a result of it. But thankfully, it retained, I think, a lot of the descriptive nature of a graphic novel script. And, you know, I tried to appeal to all the senses of the reader. All six senses, if you will, again, trying to elevate. Like I said, this is the outcome.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you shared that little piece. And I wasn't going to dig for it because, you know, it's a personal thing. And I don't expect guests to come on here and give a rundown of their medical history. but I think that is one of that's one of those things that happened throughout the writing process of this book, and you and I both know this has been a project in the works for, you know, a few years now. But for me, like the first time that you called and was telling me this story, or I called you, either way it goes, we were talking on the phone and you were telling me this story and how this condition that you had, how it was already, you had already written this character that had this third eye and this ability that was growing from almost the same spot that you had going on. So it was almost like subconsciously or there was some kind of intervention outside of your physical self that was saying, hey, look, we're going to make this really personal here. We're going to gear this character to what you're going through and what you're dealing with. I mean, to me, that's almost a supernatural thing, or not even almost. That is a supernatural thing that you had put this, you know, pen to paper or finger to keys, whatever, and then it bleeds into reality. You know, it's something mm-hmm. that you're having yeah. to deal with and having to go through almost to a point that I think that there's no way that you can't associate with this character. Like you have to feel for him. You have to be, have empathy and sympathy for this character that you're creating because it's something that you're going through during the same time.
Sure. Yeah. Most certainly. You gotta, as they say, write what you know, right? And the interesting thing about it was through that time, there was a lot that I had to kind of reshape in my brain, in my mind. So this did give me the opportunity to do that in words as well. I enjoyed some other kinds of exercises, but this was really the one that was most fitting for me because it was something in me that needed to, I guess, metaphorically come out, if you will. So, but I do want to mention this one thing because, you know, I love comedy. So there's a lot of comedy in this. There's a lot of levity. Because when you're dealing with, this is one of the things that I felt like, how can you write something that's like, oh man, is everybody shitty? And yeah, like, okay, yeah, everybody knows that, right? But we got to uplift it at the same time. So it has a lot of humor in it as well that I think people will enjoy. If you like pot, right on. There you go. There's a few pages to read. You know, if you like martial arts, bang zoom, I got you covered. Several pages to read, so it's got all that stuff. Like when you say, an action science fiction fan had a box they could put everything in, they said, oh yeah, man, I would love, you know, if Luke Skywalker actually kicked the shit out of somebody, you know, like just spun Bruce Lee style, like wow, and just hit you in the head, you know. But he don't do that, you know? So, you know, that's what I enjoyed about it because it also gave me that buoyancy, right? You got to have a reason to look up. And so this, again, trying to carry that theme through gave me an opportunity to carry it through both fiction and in fact.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it, man. I love it. I just, what I enjoy most about my version, at least, I know that it's changed a little from that time, the final product from the product that I have, but what I love most about it, and you often think about this, you know, when you're reading the works of somebody, you know, you're constantly thinking like, okay, well, how do their interests and their passions, you know, how does that go into the work? So what I love about it is, when I'm reading this book, because I know you, because I know the things that you enjoy, I know your hobbies, I know a lot about the man that you are. When I'm reading this book, I'm reading a lot about your personality and your interests and your passions and your belief systems and morals and values and that's what I love most about reading this, because you're reading this art, you're reading this work, and that's what it is. It's art. It truly is. But you're reading this and you're seeing the person behind it. You're seeing the author. You're seeing the humanity of the writer. That's what I love most about it. And it's changed my way of reading material. You know, I really, because I know you, and there's certain parts that I'm reading and I'm literally laughing to myself thinking, man, that's Derek straight up. That's everything that he loves. That's all that he's about on these pages.
Yeah.
It's made me, when I'm reading other people's works that I don't know personally,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking to myself, I'm getting a glimpse of their personality. I'm getting a glimpse of their consciousness in mm-hmm. in this work. And that's and I know it's a little different for me than it will be the readers. But I mean, y'all see me right now.
I think that's the right way to say it, Justin. I think every author always has a piece of themselves in their work. Like one of my favorite authors, Jared, his name is simply Brom. He's an artist too. And he writes fictional stories and they're amazing. He does really, as Justin, I turned him on to Lost Gods, his book, and it's just phenomenal. But each one of his books, you just know it's him by the way it's written, by the way it's read, you know, and I think the same could be said for every author. All that really, I mean, that you're imitating life. That's
right.
That's art, right?
Yeah. And you know, my degree, as I said, is in writing. So I did a lot of, wrote a lot of poetry. In fact, that's the first thing of mine that was ever published was poetry of mine. You know, you just learn. For me, it was the feel of words, if you will. And I remember one of the professors said to me, it's the, when you're writing, you have to put weight on words so that people can feel the significance of them. And so that's one of the things I tried to do throughout this story. You know, and another thing that helps me give, you know, some complexity to it, I think, is that these many of the people in here, although the names have changed, as they say, are real people. Okay. I don't want to go into all. Justin, you're not in this book. Let's just.
You're the 81-year-old.
Yeah, you.
No, I'm definitely not that smart.
Well, I wish I could respond to that, but yeah, I could see Justin as 81-year-old.
Although, in all fairness, it's raining today and my hip's hurting, so.
Oh my.
Well, you're talking about not to cut you off here or anything, but you're talking about, you know, how the first works that you ever had published was poetry. And that's mm-hmm. another thing. I think that's one of the first things that I responded back to you with after I read, I think it was just a few pages, a couple chapters at this point, and how mm-hmm. poetic it sounded, like a lot of the writing and the way there's even like before the chapters. And again, in the version that I have before the chapters, you have these, what exactly would you call them?
I call them songs. Like the chapters are broke up by psalms that are dedicated to yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Okay. And I try to relate what's happening today to the present situation the characters are going through. And also the implications to tomorrow, because again, as they say, if you don't recall your history, you're doomed to repeat it, your failures. I tried to do that. But there's also, I had to try to balance certain things. As I said, you know, you write something that can be consensually, potentially viewed as doom and gloom. You have to give it some people reason to continue, right? Again, to say people are human suck is like, is an obvious no-brainer, okay? That's anticlimactic, right? You got to give them some reason to say there's hope. And one way or the other, no matter what side you're rooting for, there's hope. And so that's what those chapters are there for. The one... For example, Nosferatu's Last Kiss is a poem that relates to the individual I said who came to execute the war on humans because of his nature as being someone who is a destroyer, who is seeking comfort from his, you know, but he's his forced nature. It's about him being needing something from this woman he's with. And so it's, I think it's just a good way to transition their relationship into this fictional environment. So I can,
it's something he didn't even realize he needed until he found it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And the thing is, and I'll tell you one thing about that particular poem, which I'm somewhat proud of, although I guess I should have gotten a moving violation. I wrote it while I was driving in a snowstorm. I wrote it one-handed while
we drive differently, Derek.
He said we drive differently. I'm like this, drive snowstorm. I bet you back on those back roads is tearing up the road. Anyway, when passion comes to you, I'm sure you guys can follow it. And that, you know, I know, and what I like about you guys, your podcast, is that you're allowed to say real things. You know what I mean? Men say passion, you know, oh my God, let me, you know, go and hide in a corner or something like that. But, you know, we're allowed to have it. We're allowed to paint, you know, from our souls, so to speak. And I guess is what they say, being authentic and, you know, living your best life. But again, we just don't have to do it at the price of someone else's best life. And we just got to get over it. Just got to get over it.
Yeah.
So. Yes.
Agree 100%. This first, would it be okay if I just give the audience, if I give the Hill Folk a little teaser of this first psalm, the very first thing you read?
Sure. Most certainly.
When you are born into the world, first steps are the hardest, filled with trepidation, but yet a strange familiarity. Perhaps in that moment, it is best to be blind, stumbling in the shadow of infancy for fresh footing. When life ends, there's a fleeting moment when all that is lost is regained in memory. After all, from cradle to grave, you are only a fading memory sustained by love or hate. For all I know of myths and religiosity, life after death is the zenith, opening a doorway to immortality. In the bowels of the afterlife, saints and the wicked believe they join in an exquisite ballet. For most, there is only death and decay, and the reality that servants are you all. For a lucky few, the waste and gluttony of life is left behind, dissension granting a new beginning. That is the grist of truth. This too is true. To birth the universe, the all willed itself to exist in a kaleidoscope, time, matter, darkness, light, and sound. The birth of death is the child they fear told the end of forever. Their reign is nigh complete. Bow ye now in the shadow of the all's majesty. Pray your earthly soul will waft beyond the stars into a divine river of mystery flowing in the abyss of eternity to Callum.
My God. I've visualized every, and fun fact, Derek, I've taken mushrooms before and seen that kaleidoscope.
Cool. Hey, I hope people enjoy the book in all ways, in all colors. You know,
that's awesome.
That's what's real. That's what's real. You know what I mean? All these things want to shy away from that. But no, when I write that or wrote that, not that I anticipated that, because you know it's over 100,000 words, right? And you know it started with a sentence, but. When I picture that, it's almost like that Star Wars opening, you know, when the scroll goes up, and I just see that, and then you open up into the world that exists at that time, which is Earth 2050 on Intergalactic Independence Day. And this warrant, as I said, is being finally completed, at least with the execution of the last two humans, having to fight against the Celestial who's executing the war, and his name is Ilum. Fight against Ilum's champion named Cole, Blackheart Cole. And Blackheart Cole is, you know, kicking their behinds and everything like that. And so these two guys come down to it and they, you know, have to see who's going to survive. And as I said, one goes down and then then you got it. You got one man standing. And again, the story is what happens. We're joining one chapters to get to the end. It's kind of hard when there's tens of millions of transhumans against you and a celestial and alien beast, et cetera. So he finds a way to make it to the final chapter, but we'll see what that means.
Yeah. Two man enter, one man leave. Two man enter, one man leave. But no, it really is. It's really cool, like what he's talking about. And just to kind of add on a little bit, and not to give too much away, but there's something on this, like this Independence Day, there's something that's called like a Blood Bowl. It's a huge entertainment thing for, you know, all the beings of the universe. They're all watching. So it's almost like you take, like, just because the kids made me watch it again recently, you take like the Hunger Games, right? You take the what's going on with the Hunger Games, but it's on a universal scale. Okay. Mm-hmm. And these last two humans here, they're battling against creatures and entities and things that are far superior to anything that they're capable of or have. But it's that I love the way that it begins like that, with it being just this huge form of entertainment for everybody else out there. It brings in like the whole thing, like you've talked about this entire time, about how social media and the internet and all these forms of entertainment, we lose sight of the humanity and the individuality of the people that are there. You know, we lose sight of that. We start to just see everything as all encompassing. Again, just humans are crap. Mm-hmm. You know, we lose sight of, well, I mean, did this guy just have to find his way out of this arena, this mm-hmm. blood bowl today to get to where he is today? And is that why he said what he said? Like, we lose sight of these things. We forget. Mm-hmm. We forget to put ourselves in other shoes just for a moment, and to dole out grace and compassion in a world that truly needs it more than maybe any other time in history. We are so divided, just like in this book, to where you literally have a decree being laid down like, nope, we're exterminating this race of pests. They've been a disease. All they've ever done is kill and rape and pillage, and that's all the race has accomplished. But where are the individuals in that? That's what, man, I'm gonna go back through
and think about it this way, Justin. In each of our bodies, I can't remember if I had notes in front of me, I'd tell you, but you know, we got all these, you know, mites on us and all that kind of stuff, right? But we're just like mites in the bloodstream of all that exists, in the bloodstream of life. And somehow we have the audacity to think that Earth is the only planet that has anything going on.
Agreed.
Anything. We're smarter than everybody. We're faster than everybody. We got better weapons than everybody. You know, our girls are pretty or whatever. You know, our sports are better. And there's nobody out there who could challenge that concept. Have trillions of planets, and we think we're the only ones.
Exactly.
We think that, and you know, not. And that's one of the things I definitely tried to avoid. This is not about religion. Okay. This is not about religion, okay? And actually, it has caused me to change my religious philosophy as a result of this writing. This is not about that. This is about something beyond that, because as I said in my class recently, all religion is about is you strip away who you're talking about and all that kind of stuff. Let me not be controversial, but Justin knows that I might be. You strip all that away. What we're all trying to obtain through being religious is elevation. We are all just trying to find a reason to say, you know, let me look up from my life and see something that tells me it's going to be better and I can be better and other people can be better. No matter what you call it, whether you call him Christ, you know, you want to call him Muhammad, you want to call him Yahweh, you know, Jehovah, whatever you want to call him, or her, pardon me. See, that's the thing. There you go. As I said in class, why do y'all we got to have a penis? I mean, what's all that about? He's so vain that it's like they're the only planet, and God's got to have a penis. Uh-huh, write that down. And if God has a penis, and, oh, by the way, most of them are going to be white. What?
Yeah.
I'm going to stop there. Just don't kick me off. Don't kick me off.
No, we know Jesus wasn't white.
We know none of them were white.
Right, thank you.
As a matter of fact, I read something recently that all the artist renditions of what we thought was Jesus was actually this guy named Borgia. Have you seen that? And he was Da Vinci's lover.
Okay, okay.
Da Vinci painted him. He was the son of Alexander, right?
Yeah.
Yes, Da Vinci's lover. Okay. And his actual painting, he looks like every Jesus ever painted.
Every white Jesus.
Every white Jesus. And it's at that point in time, they destroyed the pictures of black Jesus, basically.
Well, you'll have to compare the timing of Da Vinci and Alexander's existences.
I don't 1502.
I don't know, think they coincided that day. But in either case, we understand your point. And the thing is, you know, I had a coworker, I'll say, a white Polish lady. She showed me, and she gave me the card, and she said, "Please, you can keep it." The Black Madonna, Czesnahova. You know, so you know, you know all these things not to be true and stuff like that. But I believe there's a higher being. I just don't think. I think that our problem, part of our Tower of Babel, is religion itself. And I think that when you actually read the Bible, which I've read closely, I think it may actually be a reference to that, metaphorically at least. That it divides us, you know, especially if you don't apply it, you don't apply it right. If you apply it so that it benefits you, then, you know, again, it can mean whatever. The words don't mean anything if you don't have the intent to apply them realistically. And I think you should clearly look at someone's actions and not their words anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yes. And that's what, and that's what I love about this podcast as well, because we're always, you know, each and every single person that we bring onto the show as a guest, you know, me and Ryan and Lance individually, we all have different belief systems, different ways we see certain things, but it's never a debate. It's never a fight. It's always conversation to help broaden perspectives. And, you know, everybody knows, you know, the audience, everybody knows that I'm extremely strong in my faith. You know, I am a follower of Christ. I do believe the Bible to be true. And Derek knows this too. We've had all kinds of conversations about this. Mm-hmm. But again, we're not doing this just for, you know, to look good for the audience. These are how mine and Derek's conversations always go. We can always have these conversations and we can disagree on certain areas. And I'm not saying that I don't agree with what Derek's saying. I just put a little different viewpoint on the things that he's saying. I believe, me personally, the Christ of the Bible, the Jesus Christ of the Bible, it is about elevation. It is about bettering yourself and self-reflection and looking in the mirror and, you know, following his teachings. There's not one of those that's going to make you a worse person. I'm extremely strong in my faith and I'm vocal about that. But what I love about it is when you have, let's say, differing viewpoints of the all, you know, referring to omnis here, when you have different viewpoints, but you can still have conversations about it. It don't just have to be about religion or belief systems or how we're all going to get to heaven or get to this paradise when we leave here or whatever the case may be. But if we, as a people, if we look at each conversation, each topic, each issue, you know, culturally, societally, whatever, if we have the conversation, not fight and bicker and argue and no, I'm right and you're wrong. No, my God's right and your God's wrong. If I'm a follower of Christ, if I'm following his teachings, then the last thing that I want to do is argue with you about what you believe, what you think, how you act. My job as a follower of Christ is to love you, to care for you, to be compassionate and gracious towards you, and to be relatable to you. So we can share this path of elevation. You know, it's all going back to that. We're stuck here in this little box, and I think that we are born, from the day that we're born, we have a God that says, hey, bust out of that box. You know, draw closer to me. And again, however you
stop putting God in a box.
Absolutely.
That's what we got to do. We got to stop putting God in a box and understand none of this shit has anything. We all have the same problems. It doesn't matter what you look like. We all have the same exact. We're just trying to get through this damn life, man. And, you know, that is one of the things that is going extinct. Mm-hmm. Is healthy debate and conversation on differing viewpoints. Mm-hmm. And I blame a lot of the social media outlets because you got these idiots on there that, Republican burns liberal or liberal hands it to racist Republican, or it's all clickbait. And and they're not helping anything. They're not helping a damn thing. All they're doing is causing division and hate. Stirring emotions in two different sides, whatever side you want to find yourself on. Mm-hmm. And it's all it's doing. It's playing to your emotions, getting you riled up, getting you mad. And what are you mad at?
Right.
Who are you mad at?
But this is a conversation that me and Derek have had a whole, we've had it almost every time we speak.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is so important. And that's what that's obviously we want to put Derek's book out there. Obviously, that's what this is about. I mean, let's just call it what it is. We want people to buy his book. I mean, it's an awesome book. Yes. You should buy it.
Yes.
But this is where I was hoping the conversation would kind of lead toward, because we say all the time in our private conversations, it's so important for the world to be able, and look, I mean, well, you know, we've had downloads in 96 different countries. So we're worldwide, okay?
We're worldwide.
It's important for the world to see a white hillbilly redneck that grew up in a trailer in a holler be able to sit down and have a conversation with a black dude from Philly, from the projects in Philly, and to be able to come together.
A black law professor, author, you're leaving all that out, man.
No, at the end of the day, it's black dude. That's what I'd rather be known as.
But that's the thing. At the end of the day, to the world, it's black dude from the projects and white redneck from the trailer.
Right.
That's what the world sees.
If they're being polite, they'll say black dude from that. Those are thank you. Not breaking it down like two syllables. Did I say that? But you know, I want to say that there's room. I believe, you know, I know Jesus lived, okay, and I believe Jesus did wonderful things. I'm not saying that, and I believe Jesus was the Son of God. I'm not saying that. I just think that you can read the book for what it is, and you got to separate certain parts to know, you know, what is usable in your life, and not, you know, not the mythology. Okay, I'm sorry. Some of it is mythology. But I believe Jesus lived, and I believe dinosaurs did too. I don't know how it is that you can have these bones and be like, hey, it didn't happen that way. Okay, come on. Let's stop being blind. Which this character is dealing with.
How come we can't find the Mayans' bones? Where'd they go?
Oh, no. The dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs were billions of years ago. The Mayans were just a couple of thousand. We can't find them nowhere. I think the aliens took them, man.
Here you go. The aliens took them. But I want to share this real quick. And this is on the back of the book. It's blurb there. It says, on Intergalactic Independence Day, Earth 2050 Sledge, is dragged kicking and screaming into a struggle for survival, just like you. With only a walking stick and Grid S8, he finds himself in a dystopic universe pitted against celestial beings exploiting the confluence of apex AI, cancer cultures, perpetual acts of genocide, and humans' irrepressible self-indulgence to exterminate humans for past misdeeds and future crimes. Like you, Fate demands Sledge concede that freedom is best achieved by accepting the destiny he shares with all other humans, by continuing to evade it with precious little in hand. Skipping down, the clock is ticking, tick tock. What are you going to do? You want to be part of these cancer cultures? And I know it's cancel. That's because we want to make it fashionable and spill tea and all that bullshit that I hope plays out real soon. Instead of just saying that it's a cancer in us. Is growing, you know.
That's exactly what it is. That is exactly what it is. And it is crazy to me to think that someone feels so self-righteous, so important to the rest of the world, apparently, that no one else can say anything that would ever offend their ears or any. And truth offends. It really does. The truth hurts. That's why they say that. I mean, the truth can be offensive, like in certain ways. You know, do I look fat in this dress? Of course, but you never say that. But
I want to know who you're thinking of. That is that automatic?
No. My wife knows my jokes. No, she's been married to me for almost 21 years. But
okay. That's...
Oh man,
I'm just making a joke, but it's the truth. You know, that these things, and that is a cancer, the cancel culture. Now, should people be in trouble for bad things they do? Yes. But should be the whole her truth thing? No, you can't just, I could just go up and say, Justin touched me inappropriately. And apparently everybody's supposed to cancel him. So
it would be true. It would be true.
I mean, practicality and application are two different things. You know what I mean? You got to.
Well, we have to be able to hold ourselves and others accountable when the time calls for it. But we also have to understand that not everything that we see and hear is truth. You know, we have to be able to discern what is true and what is not. Not these.
You can't lie on the internet.
No. My God. It's like relying on National Enquirer.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Look, Bat Boy was real.
They were telling us for years about the aliens, and we didn't believe them.
And we didn't believe them. No. Elvis is an alien. I think Elvis. Bruce Lee is still alive. What is Elvis? You know?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
But you read some crap on the internet, or like I said, you hear someone, some person, some loudmouth spouting off because they want to get more hits. Now, if you knew that people were using you and selling you a bill of goods every day just so that you can make money on, wouldn't you just stop? And you're like, nah, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to let them use me, but it's like, no, let me put another quarter in this machine and watch ching ching. And it's ridiculous, but you know, that's where we are. Popcorn, society, a microwave, and everything's got to happen, you know, fast and stuff like that. But I, you know, again, there's a lot of stuff that's good. A lot of stuff to look forward to. If these wealth of opportunities are shared, you know what I mean? If Hell, if they let me go off into space with sitting next to Michael Strahan, I'd be cool too. You know, I wouldn't care if me and William Shatner got down, shot up off there and came back and be like, woohee, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'd be good with it too. But they ain't going to take us off.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, and I think you're really, that's, again, that's another thing that I love about this book. And I know that we've went down some sidebar conversations and different topics here and there, but it all comes back to the book. Everything that we're talking about here, you'll find in this book. You'll find in Omnis, Last Man of Earth. And it's presented in a way that, yes, absolutely, it's science fiction. Yeah. It is. We got a lot of sci-fi lovers out there. I love some good sci-fi.
Yes.
But not all of it is completely relatable to the society and the culture and the way that things are in the world today, especially America. I don't know what it's like to be in the world. I know what it's like to live in America. And I know what I see on a daily basis. And when you go and you read this science fiction book, in my mind, while I'm reading, I'm thinking, you know what? We're only a few steps away from science fact.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's good. I'm gonna put that on a t-shirt. That was good. I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at Star Trek. They used to FaceTime on their little handheld weird-looking things. Now we're doing it on our little handheld weird-looking things. For sure.
And I'll tell you that you know, being a science fiction fan, like there was a character he was a doctor. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Next Generation. But anyway. He was a hologram and he could become solid. And I like the concept so much. And if you like strong female characters, strong female characters, I'll put it as that. There's a strong female character who develops from a similar device, I would say. And she draws in your emotions. And then she uses those to control you. And so she's a hero, and if you like that kind of stuff, I think she's really an attractive character to consider reading about.
Yeah, definitely. Well, like I said, I don't think you're too far off with the fiction in this book. I mean, we see what, you know, you're talking about what Bezos is doing with space travel right now. You're seeing what Elon Musk is doing right now with Neuralink and SpaceX and all these different things. I mean, I literally watched a video, and again, it was on the internet, so you know, who knows? But I watched a video of a chimpanzee with a Neuralink implant playing Pong with his mind. That's pretty remarkable.
Sure.
So, look, you can just me reading the tea leaves. I think we're kind of in the initial stages of some form of transhumanism. I'm not going to call it an agenda. I think that, like with everything, that there are good intentions with what's coming with this Neuralink. And, you know, absolutely, if it can heal the blind and make the lame walk. No, we're talking about a chip. We're talking about Jesus, and we're talking about a chip that we can put in the brain. If we can do these things, and you know, that's tremendous. That's great. I mean, if I was blind my entire life and somebody had come to me and said, "Hey, look, if we put this implant in your brain, you're going to be able to see." Absolutely do it. I don't care what the effects may be in the future. Yeah, I want to be able to see. So I think initially, just like with all technology or magic, whichever way you look at it, with all technology, I think it always starts with good intentions. I don't think anybody really creates something initially. There may be a few instances here and there that the CIA's got their hands on, but I think...
Oh, they wouldn't do that.
Oh, yeah.
But I can give you, how about this technology? Would you ever hear of a pair of English? Like I include this because, again, I did this research a number of things from, you know, beginning of time to 2050. And so I discovered, like, the brutality of humans one to another. A pair of anguish is a device technology that they would punish you with by putting the pear-shaped in someplace you didn't want it and then turning it till it opened further.
Mm.
And they, yeah. So you want to talk about, you, no one's use of technology was intended from the beginning. That is technology.
Well, that was initially meant for post holes that weren't dug quite wide enough. You put those in, and
but who fell on it? It was like, oh, let's use it for that.
Wait,
oh,
we could use this. We could use this.
Getting to the root of the problem.
Oh my god.
Oh, sorry. Man. Oh,
sorry. I didn't mean to take it there.
We went regardless. That's but no, I think, but just again, just back to that point, I think that if you have a mass percentage of the population that has a implant in their brain, you know, there is a possibility that one person or a group of people could gain access to that and be able to do what they wanted to with it, right? Yeah, so
hacking you and. But yeah, that would be crazy.
But isn't that happening to us?
Absolutely.
And in terms of it, and then, you know, that there's the imagery, if you will, or the relation to in the storyline. But we've got these things in our heads. We walk around and they're constantly telling us what to do, what, you know, what to think. It's not like it's not happening. We know what subliminal messaging is. You can see almost every other day that there's some type of, you know, there's a story about some company, AI company, technology company that is abusing information to learn how to manipulate you. It's not like it's not happening. We just are subtly, you know, going to sleep on these things, you know, like the frog, the proverbial pot, boiling pot. But some of these things are happening. We just have to, and that's the reason why, you know, I'm saying, let's self-examine a little bit before we keep going down the road of thinking it's everybody else's fault. Because, you know, I just met Ryan. You know, he's a cool ass mom. All right. I love his bald ass head. You know what I'm saying?
I can't help that.
I thought he had an afro on his head. I don't know what the hell was it. You know, like anyway, let me go. I say something stupid. But, you know, it's not that hard, man. It's not that hard.
No.
Not that hard to connect with somebody.
It's absolutely free to be nice.
Yeah.
It costs nothing to be a good person.
Mm-hmm. Most certainly.
It can cost you a lot not to be.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah. For sure.
Sure. And can, let me know if, because I do want people to read it, you know, because I think it is a great book. It's a great ride, great piece of fiction, you know, and it was a great story for people to absorb in other ways, as we've been talking about. Is there something that I can show to let people know how to get it, or can I wait?
Absolutely, yeah.
You have a QR code, right? You wanted to share a screen, and this is going up on YouTube, so that'll be on YouTube. They can get that QR code if you want to post that up there real fast on the screen.
Cool. Thank you.
Can also, if you want to send it, if you want to email that to us, we can list it in the show notes. I'll figure out a way to put it in the show notes or up on the social somehow as well.
Let me move the pictures of you guys over here. Oh, it went away, man.
Yeah, I'll stop it. Stop the share. This is technology. I shouldn't talk bad about technology. Yeah. You know, and yeah, you guys have heard of the garbage in, garbage out, right?
Oh, so, yeah, for sure.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, man, this looks awesome.
Yeah, large technology. Thank you.
I mean, that psalm at the beginning, Justin, right? That it was like it painted the beginning of the universe for me. Like when he was talking about the kaleidoscope and matter and sound and time and all that, that was like the big bang. And then when he talked about the river and the waterfall, all I could picture was glistening stars flowing and making the Milky Way out. It was just, it was amazing.
But let me ask you this, Ryan, real quick. When that happened, right? And if I did my reading, my research and all that kind of stuff, got some stuff off the internet. So like, is all of it true? Who knows? It's all fiction now. But when all that happened, where did it come from?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Where did it all come from? Where did it start? Well, it's the question every person has pondered, you know, since the beginning of a thinking man, you know?
Uh-huh. But that version, I'm going to stop sharing that. I apologize. The version that I sent to Justin does not have that answer in it. But this final version does.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, I better be getting a signed copy of one of those too.
I'll be like Oprah, and you get a copy.
Absolutely.
It's not happening. I'll be like, and you can buy a copy.
You get a book, and you can buy a book.
You can buy one. Obama, you can buy one.
Every one of you can buy a book.
Everybody can buy a book. Leave me alone.
But no, that QR code was just up on the screen, y'all. Make sure you just scan that. It'll take you directly where you can buy the book, purchase the book. Where else? We'll just, since we're going ahead and sharing the QR code, why don't you tell the audience, Derek, where they can buy the book, other than, you know, if they don't know how to scan a QR code, where can they go to find the book?
Sure. The publisher is called Author House. AUTHORHOUSE, Author House. You can also get it on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes & Noble. And all you have to do is put in Omnis, OMNIS, Google, Omnis book, and it'll come up. And this lovely cover is visible to you. You can get it in hard copy, soft copy, and also as a digital file. Hopefully sometime soon I have an audio, but right now those three are available.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Are you going to go audio with it? Because it'd be really cool to hear. Like, that's one of my favorite things too. I'll read a book, but I also like to listen to them, because the way people can make them, like a professional narrator can make them come to life. It's a whole different experience on that same book.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things I want to show you guys, if we hopefully camera capture. But because this is about universality, it also is universality of art. This is created by ChatGPT. Okay. This was created by an artist out of Canada. His name is Kyle Smith. That's the character Sledge fighting in Canada. One of the scenes in the story, several individuals referred to as the sufferers. And there's other artwork, hand-drawn artwork in here from Kyle. And it also, you know, again, I want to try to appeal to all the senses of the reader as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Hill folk, definitely go out all these places that Professor Howard told you where to go find this book. Buy the book up, because I'm telling you, if you like the thought, or not the, let's rephrase that. If you like the entertainment, the media that you consume about like a futuristic dystopian society and how all that plays out with twists and turns and people coming down and this gap between the lowly and the elite, buy this book. If you like Kung Fu Ninjutsu, buy this book. If you like cyborgs and aliens and spacecraft and technology that you couldn't even imagine, buy this book. If you're a super nerd dork like I am, and you like comic books and sci-fi and all the things that all of that entails, buy this book. The best way that I can describe this book is you take all of your favorite sci-fi films, place that into a dystopian setting with a sense of extreme culturally diverse characters with totally different personalities that come together and make this story come alive again with all the twists and the turns and the once you think you know what's about to happen, that doesn't happen. If you enjoy those things, buy this book. And if you don't like any of that stuff, just buy this book. Buy this book because I'm asking you to. Yeah. And as a loyal member of this Hillfolk tribe, you should just do it because I'm saying please. Just yeah. we're not above begging here. Just please buy the book.
Well, you know, now if you want to have a good ride and a good time, and get somewhere that's meaningful at the same time, buy this book.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to close it out. Derek, yeah. We appreciate you so, so, so much for coming on the show, for having this conversation with us. Again, I'm blessed to know you. I'm blessed to have you as family. I'm blessed that you're in my life to be a phone call away anytime I want to talk and have these types of conversations. It doesn't have to wait till a podcast episode. But we're so thankful for you. We're thankful for what you're doing. We're just thankful for who you are and the sense of sharing life together as a common people. We're thankful for that because that is a character trait that if everyone had, man, the world would be a lot better place.
A lot better.
I appreciate that. Can I just leave one other than saying thank you to you guys for sure. I appreciate the chance to talk with you about something that means a lot to me. And I'll say this, in having gone from being, you know, awake and alert one day and then going into darkness and coming out a few days later, it taught me a lot. And I think that no matter what you do, whether you buy this book or nothing, by this fact that if you don't look in the mirror and come to some source of truth of who you really are, you're never going to change. So do something about that. And by the way, let that shit go.
Yeah, let that shit go.
That's it. That's it. And I think I was going to close it out, but I think that, and again, not to get too personal here, but I think the audience, I think you need to know that this piece of art is a story of triumph and victory, not only with what characters you may read of or about, but also about the man who wrote them. I mean, again, you know, he hasn't gone full into detail, but times got real hard and real scary real quick for a whole lot of people. I mean, especially him, but for a whole lot of people that care about him and loved him, it got real dark real quick. And to know that this is a work that started throughout that process. And then the work that was put in to have this finished product, man, y'all would not even believe or imagine the ride from point A to point B. So just know that this final piece, man, it was a lot to get there, but you can see every bit of that in it. And know that if you want to do something, if you have a dream, if you have a passion, and you've been putting it off. What Derek has showed me with this book is, and no matter what you're going through, no matter what life throws at you or tries to take away from you, man, just shoot for it. Just do it. Just do it. Put it out there. Let other people enjoy it and relate to it. But know that this piece, that this book, man, it's a work of, it's victory. It's victory. It's triumph. It's, again, we'll just go back to Jesus. Like he said on the cross, it is finished.
It is finished.
Amen.
But no, again, Derek, thank you so much for coming on. It was a pleasure.
Yes.
I really hope the Hill folk flock your way. Is there anything else that you'd like to share for anywhere that people can find you or follow you on anything other than the places just to buy the book?
Just buy the book. Quite honestly, we'll have a website up sometime soon. I can't tell you what it'll be, but all you got to do is search for Omnis book. In fact, Derek Howard, D-E-R-R-I-C-K, one of the easiest names to find on the internet. You put that down and lawyer, you're going to find my face.
And it's a handsome one, folks. Y'all don't even know. All right, Derek, again, we appreciate you. Hill folk, no, you know, we know we love you. You know where you can find us. Again, we'll close it down. You can find us on all the socials, Facebook, X, Instagram, Discord, YouTube, TikTok. Ryan's been working on some TikTok stuff. That is not my area of expertise at all. So.
No, that's mine. It's coming along, folks. Just be patient, for God's sakes. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, and I work a full-time job, and I have a family. So
look, we've got the most patient listeners in the history of the world. They are loyal, and they are patient. And for some reason, they love three idiots that just talk a bunch of crazy stuff all the time.
Well, we love them back.
Absolutely.
That's important.
We do love them back. We do love them back.
We wouldn't be here without them. We wouldn't even be doing this without them.
No, absolutely not. We do love them back. You know where you find us, all those places. You know how you can support the show. Support the show link over on Patreon. Send us your stories, experiences, interview requests, any of those things at AppalachianIntelligence@gmail.com. Don't be afraid to send us whatever you want to send us. You know, I mean, and we're totally, completely relatable that we're just dudes. Listen,
if you think it's too crazy to put on a podcast, please contact us.
Absolutely. The crazier, the better. Absolutely. Yes. And if it does take us a little bit to get back to you, we do apologize. You know, we get flooded with messages and emails. It kind of comes and goes. It ebbs and flows. But don't
Jesse
be afraid.
Jesse and I are both checking these, and we're still behind.
Yeah. We're busy dudes, again. But know that we will get back to each and every single one of you. And if by some reason we don't and it gets lost in the flood somewhere, don't be afraid to message us back again and say, hey, dummy, you didn't answer. You know, we don't care. We're not going to get our feelings hurt, I promise.
Just refer the dummy to Justin. I don't take too kindly to that.
But be sure, again, to send us all that stuff at AppalachianIntelligence@gmail.com. But y'all know the biggest way that you can support the show is by sharing the show. Share it however you're most comfortable sharing it, through text, through email, through social media. Share it word of mouth. I mean, that's been a task that's been tried and true throughout history, word of mouth.
Yes.
Share the show. Even if you listen to this episode and hate it, send it to your enemies. Say, look, these guys are dumb. I'm going to ruin your day. I don't care. Yeah. Love us, hate us, just talk about us.
Check out these dummies.
Yeah.
They even convinced some law professor to come on.
You mean I'm not getting paid after this?
No. Oh, you'll get paid.
We ain't getting paid.
Oh, you'll get paid. You'll get paid.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right.
We'll bake some cookies or something. That's
good. No problem. I am a lawyer. Don't forget that part.
Hill folk, we love y'all.
Love you guys.
And until next time, we'll see y'all later. We'll be right back.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.